Hi, and welcome to the Design Systems Podcast. This podcast is about the place where design and development overlap. We talk with experts to get their point of view about trends in design, code, and how it relates to the world around us. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Knapsack. Check us out at knapsack.cloud. If you want to get in touch with the show, ask some questions, or generally tell us what you think, go ahead and tweet us at @thedspod. We'd love to hear from you. Hey everyone, welcome to the Design Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Strahl. Today I'm here with Brad Frost. Brad is a principal DS consultant with Big Medium. Brad, you've also written a book that I think it's fair to say would be instrumental in starting this entire industry. So welcome back for the third time on the program. So excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me back for the three-peat.
Yeah, this is great. I love our conversations. One, because they flow so naturally, but two, like the stuff that we talk about always feels like the big things that are being decided on in design systems. I think today is going to be no exception.
That's what we're here for. Let's get into it.
So kicking this off, we've been having lots of conversations lately about theming. And there's this sort of like sub element of theming that I want to talk about that has a lot of parallels in a space that both you and I were once upon a time pretty familiar with. And when I think about like what happened in content management systems about 6 or 7 or maybe 8 years ago, depending on how you count, where we decided that all of our big content management platforms, having them determine what our interfaces look like based on the content that we put into them was a bad idea. And that was the rise of the decoupled CMS, headless CMS using content services, things like Contentful. All that sprang up around this idea that the content should not control the interface or the design of the interface. I think that we're facing a similar thing right now inside of the world of design systems, where we're looking at tokens and visual design as something very independent from the actual interfaces or interface design. And design systems are starting to get hip to this idea that maybe we shouldn't let our visual design directly influence the way that we're designing our interfaces. And I would love your somewhat hot take on this. And I think I know where this is going, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I think that the corollary to CMS is really apt, and I think is a really good line to draw. You could draw plenty of other lines as well, which is to say, think of building materials. You know, you go to Home Depot or prefab architecture, even furniture, right? You have these materials that have their structural integrity and functionality, right? Here's a door. It has a handle. It has some hinges. It has a certain fire rating to it. And like all of that stuff matters, right? And it really matters. And in order to get that door into a house, the fact that the door is blue or brown or white or black or has a fancy brass handle or a matte black sort of modern handle, it's kind of a separate conversation, right? Like, does the door open and close, right? Like, that's kind of what we're up against. And that's why you don't see a bunch of like lavender doors on sale at Home Depot, right? It's like often just like a white, you know, a blank slate, if you will, right? And so I think that that sort of separation of concerns, which is like a very old concept in the world of web design, right, is kind of rearing its head again. And I think that what's fascinating, though, is that like what people interact with, like from an end user perspective, is a set of functional components, right? The door opens and closes, the hinges work, the accordions open and close, whatever it might be. But those things do indeed have a style applied. So it all comes together to create a whole. But I think that historically, these kind of worlds have been smushed together, right? Bootstrap comes to mind, Foundation by Zurb, and like the kind of the rest of them, as well as, you know, Material, Tailwind UI, like a lot of these things, varying degrees of configurability, they're wildly popular because people are like, I don't want to have to think. I want a default aesthetic, right? And so that's great that you kind of have these off the shelf things, but because they kind of come with this sort of structure of these kind of components tethered to a specific aesthetic with specific colors or specific, you know, box shadows or whatever, teams end up having to do a bunch of work to override and customize and ultimately just kind of like hack the crap out of it in order to bend it into the shape that they want. And that's the stuff that we tend to see a lot. You know, you often see like Bootstrap, and then you see a whole mess of overrides to that stuff, and your eyes water and you're like, what is going on here? So I think that this trend of kind of like having a more of a just white door, you know, like a vanilla base, so to speak. Here's just the functionality. Here's just the whatever. And then BYO design to the party. That's great. That's great. So having that like sort of separation of concerns allows for us as an industry to be able to sort of share more things, because again, the door needs to open and closed irrespective of its style, right? Irrespective of the color of the door. So it's like, how could we sort of share that functionality, those semantics, that structure, those important properties that are sort of baked into these things, while also kind of setting aside the sort of aesthetic and brand expression from that?
I mean, so many thoughts there, right? Like, I remember when I used to be able to spot a WordPress site from a mile away.
Like blue rounded corners and yeah.
Or I'd be like, that site was made with Sitecore. And I used to be able to do that pretty well. And like, thankfully that's dissipated a little bit, but we're still in that same sort of place now with our design systems. So I was like, they're using Tailwind. And you can kind of tell right away. And as somebody that spent a lot of time hacking up Bootstrap to make it work inside of the land of CMSs and web frameworks, I've always kind of felt like there's this dichotomy of choice. On the one hand, you can do your whole, like, I'm not going to be too prescriptive about what my aesthetic is, and I'm going to adopt someone else's aesthetic because it's all the work is done for me. I'm going to grab material and I'm going to go with that. And there's a lot of people that do that. And that's like, I guess, to torture your metaphor a little bit, a bit like buying a door with all the hardware attached. And so like, as long as you like brass hinges and brass doorknobs, you're good to go on this. But what people often then find out is like, that doesn't match the rest of the stuff in their house and the rest of their aesthetic. And so then they have to, instead of having bought a white door where they can just install brushed nickel hinges, they have to remove the brass hinges first. And that's actually more work than if they had just started with a white door with no hardware at all. And so the white door with no hardware at all in this metaphor is like a little bit more of the roll your own approach, or maybe even having some sort of off the shelf thing that doesn't have a particular aesthetic applied to it. And I think you advocated for this in one of your relatively recent blog posts, was the idea of like, what does an open design system look like? And when I think about this concept, I think about it as this really critical piece for us getting interfaces right, is like, if there was an open source library of componentry that had no real aesthetic applied, like this is even still visual to some degree, right? But everything was like a one pixel line that was black on top of white background, and that's all it was. Or maybe make it all like fuchsia, so unless you're making the Barbie film, you at least know that it's not correct. Is that what you're kind of going for that? Is like, hey, let's try to create something that is the base that we can build from instead of these more put together systems that we have to tear apart?
In general, yes. I think that in absence of a global design system, people who are building design systems and are looking to leverage design systems and are making the calls of like, which one do I use? Do I pick an existing third party open source library, or do we roll our own? Stuff like that. Amongst these available options, which ones are the most accessible? Which ones are the most functional? Right? Is this door sturdy? Like, is the fire rating there? Whatever. And it's like everyone's left to their own research and whatever, which is fine. Like, but at the same time, a lot of these things lack the authority outside of often like their sort of corporate sponsorship or open source credentials or reputation, right? So these things kind of become de facto standards, if they're standards at all. Meanwhile, sort of like beneath all of this is HTML as a language that is the sort of, you know, the elemental pieces of how these UI components kind of come to life. So I think that my sort of thesis with this idea of a global design system is that we kind of need an intermediary layer that's somewhere in between HTML and these sort of existing design system implementations, whether they're an organization-specific design system or an open source library. in our work and what you witness as well, is we see the exact same set of components being created and recreated and recreated and recreated the world over again and again and again and again. So you have the Fortune 500 company making tabs. You have the startup making tabs. You have the B Corp making tabs. All of these places are making tabs. Tabs are not what makes the organization run. It is a commodity, right? And these poor souls, everyone across the world, these teams that we work with all day in and out, are rebuilding the same thing just to sort of get to a baseline. Or they're, again, sort of taking these solutions and then having to strip out the door hardware and like do all of that. And meanwhile, there's like accessibility sort of standards that exist as standards and things like that. And there are legit solutions to things like tabs must have these ARIA relationships to one another. You know, a label must be associated with an input. There are like real solutions to a lot of these common problems that are out there. And so the idea with this intermediary layer is that we need, like, I think something that is like, here is this vanilla base, here is the white door, here is like these kind of just more sort of structural semantic components that are accessible. They have all the best practices baked into them from a front-end perspective, accessibility perspective, internationalization perspective, and to direct the smart people who are like super specialists and have the credentials, right, to do this. And rather than sort of being like, here's this copy and paste code or some specification, it's like, here's the answer. Like, here's the actual consumable tabs. And if you use these that have been sort of blessed and sanctioned by these kind of more formal authorities, right, like that govern the web, we would end up with web experiences that are powered by a single set of these really sturdy, accessible, resilient components. And that's the idea. Let's save a bunch of developers a bunch of time and agony, refocus their efforts on doing more important things like the aesthetic layer, but also building custom components that do indeed move the needle for their specific organizations, right? Maybe it's like a specific flow, maybe it's a specific, you know, something or other, some immersive map or like whatever that might be. But meanwhile, all of those smart brains are currently rebuilding date picker logic, right? So it's like, let's get out off of that hamster wheel, figure out what's a pragmatic ideal or like a pragmatic sort of set of components that we tend to see across all these different design systems and libraries. Let's kind of do that, direct everybody's smart brains to this place, get some good solutions in place, and then they're there, and then people can move on to bigger, better things while also, I think, radically and dramatically improving the experience, like the end user experiences of the web. Like when you think about the billions and billions and billions of form fields that are out there on the internet, and how many of them don't have that relationship between the label and the input, just as like a super common, super cookie cutter problem. That's a solvable problem, right? And design systems all over the world have a text field component that takes care of that relationship for you. So it's like, wouldn't it be great if there was a way that was like, here's the text field component that's blessed by the W3C, the WAI, you know, whatever, ARIA, whoever it is that just has that sort of like authority that it's like, yes, this is the one. And then we as an industry could go use that. And of course, people are free to like continue doing things the old fashioned way and sort of build things from scratch if they so desire. But I think that the spirit of it would be the same way that all of our design systems tend to go, is like, as these things become more robust and capable or whatever, you'd be crazy not to use them, right? Like they genuinely make your life easier, make you more efficient, and free up your head and your hands to do bigger and better things.
It's something that defies convention at some level, where it's not really a framework, it's not really an SDK, it's not really a design system. It's a set of content for a design system that ultimately represents like industry best practices. And that content could be a lot of different things, but it's mostly going to be componentry. And I think it's really interesting. And I'm glad you brought up the date picker again, because the last time you were on this show, you were talking about the date picker as well as your thing that, like, nobody should ever have to solve that again. It's a solved problem. It's something that none of us should ever have to really, like, think about or worry about. And at the time, there was this kind of nascent idea that, like, hey, look, maybe HTML as a spec has failed us a little bit in not creating some of these things more deeply into the way that our browsers actually work and the way that we think about and interpret things. And I like this idea of this inclusion of a middle layer here that is distinct from the really, really elementary stuff that HTML and CSS are doing, but also distinct from the implementations that we're seeing across all these different companies. And those implementations, not all of them have to be their own special snowflakes. So if we're going all in on systems, like, let's actually go all in on systems and say that there is some sort of upstream here that should represent a valid use case for the overwhelming majority of people that want to adopt it.
Yeah, it's just real pragmatic stuff. And, like, the great thing is that a lot of the thinking is already done and is expressed and already implemented in the world's design system. So you can go component by component and say, here's an alert. Guess what? Your alert probably has an error variant. It probably has a success variant. It probably has, like, a warning variant, probably an info variant. You could probably have an icon that's sort of situated beside some text. Maybe it doesn't have an icon. Maybe it's dismissible. Maybe it isn't. These things assume a common shape, right? It is possible, and this would be the exercise, is to basically sort of, like, do the requisite work of, you know, sort of going out there, sort of, like, identifying, like, the sort of common functionality of each of these components and put that into a specific place. What's interesting, kind of coming back to the date picker thing, I think that, like, what we've had to work with in the past is only the standards level stuff. And, you know, having sort of seen that process sort of play out, different people I know sort of participating in the standards process and stuff like that, it must, just out of necessity, because it is the fabric of the web, it is, like, the bedrock. So you don't want to get crap into it. But because it's part of the web, like, you need to be comprehensive with it. And as such, it is incredibly slow moving for good reason. I'm not, like, knocking that, but I'm just, like, saying that it must account for every weird tabs use case out there, right? Which is why tabs, like, doesn't exist in HTML, because there's, like, weird esoteric sort of things. And what we're finding with design systems at an organizational level or an open source level is people are going, we're not solving all tabs. We're just saying, here are the common use cases.
We're solving 80% of tabs.
We're solving 80%. And, like, that's the percentage that I just, like, keep, like, throwing out. It's like, here's the 80% use case. So doing that for several dozen design system components that pop up again and again and again would just radically improve so much and free up my napkin sketch is, like, millions upon millions of human beings' sort of heads and hands to work on more interesting problems. Like, since publishing this post about a global design system, I've had, like, all sorts of feedback, but, like, a lot of people's sharing their stories and saying, like, yeah, I got my new job and I was, like, kind of bummed out that I'm, like, basically back at square one and I'm going to be, like, rebuilding the same thing that I built at my last company. And it's like, on one hand, it's like, okay, well, at least that's, like, familiar and you should feel confident in it or whatever, more confident than you did before. On the other hand, it's like, do we really want to be recreating that date picker for our entire existence? It's like, that doesn't seem right. So I think that, like, a lot of people are on board with this, at least, like, at, like, a theoretical level. And I think that's sort of the conversations now are, like, well, how might this actually, like, happen? And that's where, of course, things get, you know, complicated.
So one of the things that I think about when you think about this, like, global design system or this idea of this, like, what is a really big sort of distinct interface from visual separation system look like? A lot of it is about, where do you draw some of these lines around complexity? And, you know, composability is getting a bunch of interest sort of in the design system zeitgeist right now, where when you think about the little book you wrote a while ago, where you proposed the model of atoms, molecules, organisms, up to, I think, then templates and pages. The structure there that people have come around to is like, well, maybe not everybody can define what an atom is. Like, people are really good at the low complexity basic bits. I can make basic interfaces that are highly modular and highly reusable. And a lot of people, I would say the vast majority, can also make small compositions of those, like cards that have a button, an image, a text box, and an eyebrow. And so that would be something that would be like a molecule. But where things start to break down is when you get to like that next level of complexity. And in that next level of complexity, you get things like form logic or steppers or shopping carts or visualizations. And there's a lot that happens where there's almost this continuum where like the more complexity that you get, the harder it is to make that experience truly reusable and modular. And you know, we all sort of stuck a finger in the wind a couple of years ago and said, you know, hey, if you reuse something three times, it should probably be a component in your design system. And now what we're kind of saying is like, because composability is a thing and your ability to very easily across pretty much every templating language, across pretty much every construction of the web, say that it's not just one component, you can actually create systems of components that interact with each other. A card now becomes a container that holds other components like a text component, a button component, and a image component. And so that ability to say like that's a composition, now a card is less of a standalone component in and of itself and more of a composition of other components. A recipe, I think, is what you proposed in one of your blogs also. You're starting to be able to take these very, very high complex things or high complexity things and shift that from saying that's a component in your design system to saying this is now a composition of a bunch of other components. And my question for you in a very long-winded roundabout way is like, what does this look like in a modern enterprise architecture? Is this, you know, a system where there's hundreds of different components and most of them are recipes? Is this a systems of systems approach? And how does this kind of interrelate to some of the prior conversation about like decoupling that we talked about?
Figma or like the design lens is actually like a more straightforward way of sort of answering the question. It was like, what does this look like? At its core, it's like, here's a bunch of design tokens. That's its own thing. That's its own like kind of foundations file is often like what it'll be sort of defined as. And that's where you're sort of defining, here's Starbucks green and here's like whatever, and here's the color ramps and stuff, but also the semantic tokens, right? And then sort of away from that, but related to it, is the core design system Figma library, right? That sort of inherits and wires up those tokens, right? That are sort of coming in from it afterwards. And that is this collection of truly universal cross an organization or beyond components, like you said, like those sort of more often more atomic elements, right? Things like checkboxes and, you know, and like labels and inputs and sort of like low level kind of stuff, including here's a card that is like literally just a box that you put stuff in, and it might define the border radius, the box shadow around it, or an option where it's invisible or whatever that might be. That's the core design system. What lives in that is the stuff that ought to be applied across the entire landscape, right? And then sort of a layer on top of that can be, doesn't have to be, but can be, especially at larger organizations, is this kind of like what we tend to call like a recipe layer. You could also maybe call it a child design system. You could also call it, you know, like really whatever you want. But it's like these are at this layer, you're starting to get into here are these compositions of components like you're talking about, right? The product card for the e-commerce team, right? Or the specific lockup that is the product image, the product title, the price, and the product description, and the shop now button or whatever it is. That thing, that composition, is not universal enough to live in the core design system, right? Because the next product over is the customer analytics dashboard, and their card needs to have a key value table in it that says, you know, here's John Doe and here's the last time they logged in and here's how much money they've spent with us and whatever. So the composition of their card needs to look radically different. So you can have a library where each one of those products can have and maintain their own library of compositions of these kind of like recipes that are using the core design system ingredients to create these specific recipes, right? These specific compositions.
So when you think about that recipe, is that something that lives on distinctly in that child design system only?
Oftentimes, yes.
So the existence of that represents a great example of what you can do with a card, for example. And it may not necessarily represent a pattern that's actually like eminently reusable, but it represents a possibility.
It's reusable in the context of the product that it ought to be reusable in. Yes.
So a great context that I think about, right, is like when you look at a related products card versus a product detail card. Product detail card is almost always like image, text, sidebar. A recommended additional product is oftentimes text first, then product, and then button. And the interesting part of all that is like it depends on position on the page, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of aesthetic consideration there. But very often, like the standard idea of a card of like image, text, button is inverted in certain circumstances. There are probably like let's take an organization, a fictitious company that has like 20 products, right? The invert card may be used in like 2 products, but that other card is used in all 20. So how do I think about that product card that is that example of that too? Is that something that is its own distinct component? Or does that now live at a product level and it represents something that exists just for that product and just for that team?
I think the latter, what you just said, where it's basically, it's like, here's these specific compositions of a card with content arranged in a particular way that does a specific job. And we want this specific composition to be employed for these specific use cases. For these other use cases, we have this other arrangement of the same ingredients, or it's sometimes a little different, but they might be shuffled around. And here are the use cases for that thing, right? And so it's like that product can manage and maintain and own and sort of govern those kind of compositions. And that's what makes sense for that specific lens. By and large, those recipes will only ever live at that layer. There are also sort of like another class of recipes that are often just like, we don't see this in the design system and we need it. We're going to create it. And that's where like sort of product teams can kind of like roll their own things, or they're like, we see this in the design system. We actually don't like it. We see the green buttons in the core design system. We actually want to go with purple. And the teams can kind of do that. And let's just say the purple performs like way better. Now that's an instance where it's like, you might want to sort of say purple is actually performing just head and shoulders above everything else. And we actually want to maybe elevate that to the standard, right? And sort of that graduates into the core design system. Recipes are like a weird beast. It's an art form because some of them are compositions, some of them are custom components, some of them are custom components that will only ever hang out and live in that recipe layer. Other things are like potential future, you know, graduating components that can sort of like move down into the core design system layer. But what we found to be really helpful with all of this is what we found is that it really unlocks the different pace layers to be able to move at their respective paces, right? Because the design system layer, the core design system layer, needs to prioritize quality over speed and reuse over like kind of one-offs. And you don't want to get a bunch of crap in the core design system, right? So it's like you kind of need to be kind of conservative.
It's like the HTML foundation, right? Like you don't want intrusions into your bedrock.
That's right. That's right. But then we need a space, right? And product teams need a space where they're able to kind of like do their thing. And if they have a sprint that they need to ship something in 2 weeks or whatever, they need to be able to have like the autonomy and the ability to sort of go ahead and create that custom component or that new thing or that deviation or whatever. And of course, there's a human process that kind of goes into all of this that when done well, you know, you kind of have like the design system team and the product teams kind of consulting with one another and sort of having open lines of communication. That's like, hey, we need to do this crazy starburst button. And the design system team could be like, okay, like here's some pointers or here's like the tokens, at least use those, but like go and knock yourself out. And then we'll sort of circle back and check back in to like see how that thing did, right? So it's like you kind of have with this like layer cake is this like, ability for different teams to sort of operate in the way that they need to. And then, of course, like the top layer of all of this is like an individual, you know, designer on a Scrum team, whatever, doing this, that would inherit the tokens library, that would inherit the core design system library, that would inherit any relevant recipe libraries. And then what they're doing is then, of course, like kind of putting, you know, a specific flow or features.
I think it's fascinating, right? Because all these levels of abstraction just go to show you that it's like between that individual designer or engineer that's actually like building the thing to go into production, all the way down to the overall overarching framework that is like HTML and CSS, it's turtles all the way down. Like there is so many different layers of abstraction and each one of them moves slower than the next layer up. And that's very intentional because each one of them allows you to have a more specific integrated example of how you want that thing to work. And I think it's fascinating, right? Like it makes me want to draw, right? I want to get a whiteboard out or like open up a Fig Jam and be like, yo, this is exactly how I see this stack, because it is so many different layers of systems that exist inside of an ecosystem that ultimately creates a much better way of building a web product. And at Knapsack, we talk a lot about intentional fragmentation, because there's lots of times where you'll have like a core Knapsack and that'll relate to some product or brand Knapsack. And when people talk about that systems of systems concept, they ultimately get hung up in the idea that this is just about the design system. But really, these systems of abstraction work at like pretty much every level of how the web is constructed. And I'm sure there's probably something in a browser that's also another like system and abstraction, right? That it starts to get beyond my ability to like see over that horizon. But this is really interesting. And a moment ago, you also explained, ironically enough, using a visual example of like, hey, this one button color performs better than this other button color. In these sorts of systems-based structures that we're talking about putting in place, where we would have like HTML and CSS, and then a layer that is a global design system, and then your company's implementation of that global design system, and then your brand implementation of it, and then your product implementation, and then like maybe some individual implementation of it. At what point do you think the streams cross between that visual acuity and the interface design? And I ask this because at some point, we do need to care, right? Like we can't have a completely abstracted away, perfect for any visual design interface at every single one of those levels. And so at what point do you feel like the reintroduction of that visual layer is essential?
I think kind of at like the organization and like brand level is the answer. Yeah, it's like that's the layer that it matters.
So do you view that tokens and this visual abstraction is really fundamentally about brand?
I think so, ultimately, yeah. But just so it said, kind of coming back to the wild popularity of a lot of these existing systems, Bootstrap, Material Design, Tailwind UI, and so on and so forth, people oftentimes are hungry for just like, give me the answer. Like I don't have strict brand requirements like at my company. We're a startup. We've got bigger fish to fry. I need to get something off the ground. It's important to sort of stress that it's like a global design system, I think, must be kind of vanilla in that white door or whatever it is. But at the same time, you absolutely can have, you know, themes out the wazoo, right? You could have your Bootstrap theme, your Material Design theme, your Tailwind UI themes, your Open Props theme, or like just like whatever sort of like visual like flavors that might be a helpful sort of starting point, right, for teams to go on. So it's just so it's said that like even at that kind of like global design system like layer, the idea is like not to sort of couple them together like we've been talking about. It's like that's a bad idea. But at the same time, having the options available where it's like, oh yeah, like here's all these things, you can brass doorknob or, you know, yeah, brushed nickel and or matte black or like whatever, like these are all here, they're ready for you to pick up, and then you just kind of like build your own kind of themes around it. And or you could go that route and then sort of have it and then sort of like layer on or your customizations on top of that, or you can roll your own, you know, your bank's custom theme or whatever on top of that. So that's really it. But it's like what we tend to see sort of play out is at its sort of core level for multi-brand design systems that we help build with our clients is like, it is very vanilla, very sort of basic. And then there's like and number of themes that we're sort of like creating the tokens for, and they all sort of flow through the token set in order to accomplish that thing. Each individual brand kind of owns its respective token values and the applications of them. But then the sort of like design system team owns the overall architecture of it, as well as the actual sort of the UI components that these tokens kind of flow through.
Fascinating. There is this intersection at the brand level where these baseline atomic components need to be able to accept every brand. And then there's going to then be another level of complexity. And maybe this is where we draw the line in the sand about like when something's a recipe, right? Is if you end up in a recipe scenario, it doesn't have to accept every brand. It can just be built for the one particular implementation or subsystem. I don't know. I think that gets really heady really quick. But the interesting part about it, right, is that we have these decisions to make that are representative of where we introduce fragmentation intentionally in our system. And I think like one thing to keep in mind, especially with our wonderful construction material door example, right, is like showrooms aren't full of just a bunch of white doors. They're full of those in situ with like a fake house, right? You know, you go in to buy a front door, and like front doors in the Pacific Northwest are a trip, right? Because everything has to be so weatherproof, waterproof up here. And so you go into a showroom and it's like all these gorgeously stained and sealed doors. But like one of them shows up at your house and it's untreated wood. And like you have to like sand it and stain it and seal it yourself. And I think that like if a showroom is full of unsanded, unstained, unsealed doors or just plain white doors, you sell a lot fewer doors. And so the thing I guess to keep in mind is like while all of these like abstractions are so important, the ultimate idea is like we're building products with this stuff, right? We're not just here to build a serviceable system. We're here to think about like how these ultimately represent our products. And that's the thing that I think is really important for us is like, regardless of how we get there, being able to show what this like end state in situ looks like, and then kind of abstracting away all the complexity that we've been talking about like how we get there. And just knowing as practitioners that like we're getting there the most efficient way we can, but keeping in mind that this is all in service of like the product.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like it all comes together to form a great and functional and hopefully just gorgeous end user experience. But like how you get there and how you sort of make things scale and make things reusable and stuff like that, like in order to unlock all the efficiency and the sort of quality gains that we know design systems can provide, it's a matter of like how those things are organized and orchestrated together. But yeah, coming out the other end is not like we're going to ship only white doors.
Yeah, nobody cares about the white door factory.
Yeah. I think that that's like the thing to just really re-stress is that it's like, I think historically, we see this all the time, and I know you have too, where it's like when you're in CMS land or whatever, and you're like trying to sort of like walk through like the metadata, or you're trying to like go through the review, the typography or like the brand palette stuff with the stakeholders, and they get fixated on the stock photo that you used for the hero, and they like can't move their eyes away from that. Or it's like, no, don't pay attention to the stock photo. Like we're here to review like the typography. And I think that like that's like the sort of spirit of a lot of these kinds of conversations is just like what we want to do. I think historically this kind of like the aesthetic and the sort of functional stuff have like kind of gotten intertwined, and it's like people get fixated on the, well, like I don't want material design's little ripple effect when you click on the button. And it's like, well, it's like, yeah, but that's a wholly separate concern than, is this button structurally sound? Is it semantic? Is it accessible? And so stuff like that. So it's like the more that we are able to sort of treat these things as these sort of separate but related concerns, the better we'll be able to like accomplish it, knowing full well that it comes out the other end as a sort of cohesive whole. The door has the paint and the hardware applied to it, and it looks great. It functions great. But like, if the door manufacturer company had to sort of like print out lavender doors and turquoise doors, maybe they wouldn't be able to sort of do that as efficiently or as, you know, with as high a quality. So it's like, let's like move those things to their respective zones knowing full well that, yes, we're going to have a fully finished product coming out the other end, but let's like be able to sort of zoom in and sort of focus on, here's this really important stuff to get right, which in the UI component world is this stuff semantic? Is this stuff accessible? Is it functional? When you click on the accordion, does it open? If you click it again, does it close? Like, does this stuff do what it needs to do? And then whether you're using Lobster or Comic Sans or whatever fancy like typography, like, is a separate conversation, and that's fine.
So you gave this example earlier about the idea of how Figma is a construction of this, and that construction is like, you know, you have your base elements and styles, you have your base like reusable UI, and that together forms a UI kit or a Figma-based design system that you can then construct things from. What's the analog look like on the engineering side?
Yes. So there's some like one-to-one sort of thing. So it's like the tokens live in Figma, and then they also live as a repository in code. There's a core design system Figma library, and the sort of corollary increasingly, like what we've been kind of seeing with organizations and helping them build is like, here is the core web component library that is kind of implementation or technology agnostic. And then there's like a couple of sort of tech specific layers that can sit on top of this. All of these things, by the way, are like totally optional. So it's like, it's not totally necessary to have all of these layers. And like a lot of times when we talk about this kind of layered approach and stuff, they're like, oh God, I can't even get my head around it and whatever. And
we're already like, at a pretty deep level of complexity.
Yeah, we're pretty deep. But yeah, I should. It's like, start simple, only add complexity when you need to. That's like the main piece of advice. So there might be web components, but then there might be a tech layer that sits on top of it that might be a React wrapper library or something. That's just like a little bit of glue code that kind of makes it React friendly and just like kind of consumers can consume the React components that are powered by web components under the hood.
We see a bunch of this now too, right? We're like, the interesting thing is web components is that like cross-platform technology where I don't have to write a separate set of components for Angular, a separate set of components for React, separate set of components for like, you know, Vue. You can basically write it in one place and then have that little bit of glue that ties it to those other frameworks.
And that glue could also be helpful in what we tend to find is like when we're working in creating these systems for our clients is like they'll often have an existing Angular library or existing React library. A lot of times maybe you'd like the API could use some like cleanup and sort of stuff like that. So it's like there could be a layer, this like kind of tech specific layer or different implementations of the core design system that make the code available in whatever sort of popular platforms are in use at an organization. And then kind of you have the corollary of recipes kind of living sort of as that kind of code corollary to what's going on in Figma world, right? So you have the product card in Figma, and then you also have like the sort of recipes repo where those kind of compositions live and are defined. And then there's also kind of like another layer that's also optional, but is something that we've been sort of helping our clients implement over the last couple of years is like, here's form controls, but they're like not necessarily like ready to go, right? You could drop them in, but then you still have to do a bunch of work to like wire them up and make them actually functional. So what we kind of call this layer like the sort of smart component layer. So it's like, here's the layer where you have the form controls wrapped in a library that is like totally drag and drop. Like this is the stuff that product teams are sort of implementing in the code base. It gives them all the sort of, you know, error handling and all that stuff, or the complex data table that has the drag and drop columns and is wired up to a specific API and all that stuff. So it's like, that stuff's helpful. And that's the stuff that like ought to be, here's these like little microservices, if you could use that word or whatever, but here's these components that are now sort of wired up. They have some smarts embedded in them. And those are the things that different product teams can reach for to get the efficiency. So it's like, at its core, you're kind of talking more of the sort of like semantics and the UX and the brand and whatever, but kind of like dumb when it comes to sort of functionality. And then there's an opportunity to kind of wire those dumb components up to some logic to sort of make them more potent and more applicable.
Well, there's so much of products these days that are buttons, forms, tables, layouts. And
yeah,
like that's most of it, right? Like, yeah. Like maybe throw a card and a nav in there and like you've got the majority of what like the user experience and the interfaces are for most products. And so the ability to take those and make them more than just a box imbued with glorious purpose is a great kind of extension of this concept into how engineering uses these as well.
And just so it's said, it's like really at the end of the day, what design systems ought to enable is for developers to work more efficiently and produce like better code. And what we've found is that it's like, sometimes you need to bust out of just that core design system layer. And we actually need to sort of like move further down the line to get this stuff into like end-to-end ready state in order for it to be truly valuable for the downstream teams. Cause if we're just like, here's your select field. Oh yeah. But oh, you still have to do all the like logic. People are going to be like, oh, that sucks. I don't want to do that.
Why wouldn't I go copy and paste out of my last time I did this logic?
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. I think the trick and like the sort of theme to all of this is that it's like everything's a component, reuse things as much as possible, but where in this sort of stack, where in this layer cake, the components or the reuse happens really depends. It just really depends on like sort of how technology specific is this, how product specific is this, how context specific is this stuff. And as you sort of like move down the stack, you're getting into stuff that's like more and more universally applicable.
Well, Brad, it's been awesome having you back. Congrats on the hat trick, 3 awesome episodes. I really, really appreciate you taking your time and spending it with us. It's always great to have you on. And what a great enthralling chat. Like that was awesome. So just appreciate you so much.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you too. Thank you.
This has been the Design Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Drawl. Have a great day, everybody. That's all for today. This has been another episode of the Design Systems Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or a topic you'd like to know more about, find us on Twitter at the DS Pod. We'd love to hear from you with show ideas, recommendations, questions, or comments. As always, this pod is brought to you by Knapsack. You can check us out at knapsack.cloud. Have a great day.